Well, we're here with Jason King, Dr. Jason King, who's the chair of the theology department here at St. Vincent's in La Trobe, Pennsylvania, who's written an enormous amount of work on dating, and we're going to be discussing that now.
Okay. Well, I think one of the problems when you're talking about dating is, it's a term that I use, but it's sort of, it was a term really like in the 1950s, and it doesn't tend to make a lot of sense these days. I laid out this timeline that I talked about. It used to be called keeping company, this companionship. You know, yes. Basically, you'd come knocking on, the suitor would come knocking on the door, usually at the invitation of the mother, and would be seated in the household of the female he's interested in, and she would sort of come down would visit and sit with them and talk in the living room, usually with parental supervision, but it's always sort of in the home, all right? And then it moves like after in the 1940s and 50s. Actually, no, it was earlier before then. It was when the car emerged. This sort of model of you get from like staying home, keeping company in the household to going on dates, and yes. Because you can go. The metaphor moves from, you know, keeping company really means someone you break bread with, break bread with, you're eating meals with somebody in the household, too, going somewhere, going steady, going dating, going out, you go to the car, and it switches from, like, the woman's household to the man's car, so the metaphors sort of shift in these 1920s, 30s, and the more the car gets mass-produced and out there, and actually sort of with the emergence of colleges in the 1940s and 50s, where you move out even further away from the household, you get a different understanding of dating. And that's also when you get the rise of, like, the gender roles. This is what men are supposed to do, women are supposed to do.
Yes.
And I often think that that's, like, a protection. Like, we're no longer in the household, so now we got to sort of very forcefully explain what roles for men and women are. So you get that sort of model, like, going steady, dating, really. In the 40s, 50s is probably when it reaches its peak. In the 60s and 70s, it sort of disappears. Like, those things, like the 1950s sort of Leave It to Beaver world gets criticized, gets pretty much eliminated, but then people don't have anything really to replace it with. So you end up with a whole bunch of experimentations in the 70s and 80s, and nobody really knows what dating is. That term isn't used much anymore. It tends to fade from the practice. And then by the time you get to what you get now, you lose any sort of, I call it a narrative, you lose any sort of script for understanding what you're doing when you're going out with people. And so if you talk to college students, they're trying to figure out, is this a date, is this not a date, are we just hooking up, are we not hooking up, or is this, are we, what are we doing? And there's no terms to understand this. My one caveat would be, I ran this through my students. I said, I mean, for example, how do you know today if people are in relationships with one another? And they said, oh, you put it on Facebook. And I'm like, oh, really? So I've been sort of, there's something new that's emerging, but before you had no idea of how to define your relationship other than what you chose. All right, and before we had some sort of social support for that. So part of this, I think, dating becomes important because you, not that I want to return to the 40s or the 50s or the 20s, but you had a community that could support these people and sort of introduce them to what does it mean to love and care about other people. And you had sort of a community supporting them or social roles that they could sort of plug into. Yeah. They knew they were there, even if they didn't follow them, they knew they were deviating from them, had to explain that they were deviating from them. But now you don't have any of that, so they don't really know, what are we doing, what should we be doing, what's this about, how should I be thinking of this seriously or not seriously, what's moving to, they don't have any way to negotiate those questions or even sort of frame those questions. So there's no sort of social mechanisms for this, and you can't sort of situate it anywhere. And I don't know quite what to do with the Facebook piece, but in Facebook you can say single, in a relationship, it's complicated. That's one of the options that's there. And it communicates to other people, your status, but I don't know what really that means on the ground for students. For me, thinking about dating also in terms of Christianity is, if you're taking this period where you're more than friends and less than married, which is pretty much 16 to 27, it's about 10 years roughly when this is prominent, what are you doing? And as Christians, what are you doing in terms of your call in response to God? What are you doing in terms of discipleship? how does this become a way in which you learn to love other people? And so I in some ways frame it along those same lines. What's this? I talk about what is the story of discipleship. It's about learning how to love other people, learning them for their good. And then how does this sort of play out in the terms of dating? And I say, look, this is people that you don't know. So you're sort of, like, one of the ways I say is you're welcoming a stranger. What does it mean to welcome a stranger? Well, you take them on their own terms. You find out who they are. You connect to them. You respect them. You learn from them. It might grow into something more permanent, but it might not. And if it doesn't, it's okay to make the judgment that this isn't a permanent relationship, as long as you've treated the other person with respect, as long as you've genuinely been concerned about their good and their well-being. And that, but we don't have the, you got to have a conversation about what is it you're doing, what is it that you want, what is it that's working, what is it that's not working. So it becomes a discernment about how do you love another person very concretely and very specifically, and also discernment about who you are and what a relationship's about in this Christian context. So I oftentimes, it's like a clue to a mystery. This is one of my lines. It's something that helps you to think about what it is that you're doing and relating. Culturally, you get sort of two extremes. You get the hookup culture, which is the dominant culture, which there's no sort of stories about how you should relate, and what happens is that people hook up, and then they might hook up again. And they might hook up again, and after maybe a month of hooking up, then they might ask the question, what are we doing? And they might be in a relationship, but they might not. And sort of the hopes that are pinned upon hooking up, which can mean anything from making out to having sex, is they hope that their first time that they hook up, it's not bad. Like, it's not like they don't regret it the next day. But there's no sense of, the hookup culture basically says you have to sort of hook up with lots of people before you find someone that you can have a relationship with. And the other perspective is in some ways sort of that you find a lot of times in the evangelical subculture is that you can't date at all in preparation for, the only thing you can have is really courtship, very formal, very supervised in preparation for marriage. And you can have the conversations, but there's no other sort of negotiations going on. It's sort of highly scripted in those things.
I've always thought, Jason, that it's difficult to really know another person. And I like your idea of welcoming the stranger when you're dating someone for the first time. I mean, in a sense, this is really true, it seems to me. You really don't know this person you're going out with very well.
Yeah.
That's the whole point, I guess.
Yeah.
That's why you would go out, in order to get to know the person. Mm-hmm. But do you think there's an appreciation of that, that getting to know another person is a long and challenging process? Or is this just sort of brushed off today? We don't really need to know this other person. Yeah. Some people.
I think it's most typically sort of brushed off. And I think the substitute that's been is, are we physically compatible? And that you got to get that sort of straightened out. And then we can maybe sort of sort out the rest of the stuff later. But if you're not, the assumption is that, well, if you're not physically compatible, if not sexually compatible, then it's not worth it. But that seems to be the criteria of how you know somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's the substitute for having conversations or getting to know the other person. And it's, one of my students said this, so she's like, this was at Lourdes, so it was one of the students that was married. She said, the physical part's pretty easy to figure out. It's the long-term communication stuff.
Oh,
and so she was saying, if you're thinking about in terms of dating, then they're sort of picking out the easy stuff to do and not really the genuine hard stuff of communicating and looking out, genuinely thinking about what is good for the other person.
And I think your student was correct.
Yeah.
That probably is the easy part for most people.
But it helps, I think, sort of have the experience of dating and then being in marriage and seeing what marriage entails. So.
You mentioned earlier that what two people who are dating should be doing is kind of negotiating what they're doing.
Yeah.
And in terms of a process here, can you talk to students about this? Is there any hope for having a conversation with students and saying, you can change, you can define what dating is. You don't have to just take what is handed to you by some movie or.
I always have hope, and I get great students around here, and so I have that hope. I think the outside of the circles that I run in, which are small Catholic liberal arts schools, the hookup culture is so dominant that it seems to be almost unchallengeable. And it's just, and it's, it seems to be, I mean, all you read all the stats and all the stories and all the narratives of these people, it seems to be so dominant. It's the only framework for understanding it. And peculiar enough, the other thing that seems to be featuring into this is that you end up with this culture that says, well, sexual ethics are governed by, well, as long as people consent to it, it's okay. But that doesn't provide you any framework for understanding. You get people that, all right, I sort of consented to it, but I didn't like it, but I can't feel guilty about it because I consented to it. So you don't have any sort of really thick understanding of what's going on that the people can't have conversations about. And this kind of, I don't know what the appropriate word is, but it's this kind of very minimal ethics really actually squashes conversation because you can't, you know, you can't negotiate. If you have high moral standards, in one way you can say, well, I might not live up to those, but I need to engage those and talk about those, and we need to have a conversation. If we're not going to live up to this, why are we not living up to this, and where are we going to draw the lines? But if you have these sort of minimal ones, well, there's nothing to negotiate. You have to sort of elicit a kind of consent, and that's it, and that's all that sort of matters. And it doesn't have to be in a relationship, because that's not essential. If you want a relationship, well, that's your preference, and why should your preference trump my preference when I don't want a relationship? So you get this dominant hookup culture, and you don't get the ability to ask really substantive sexual ethics questions, because it's just, well, whatever people decide, that's fine. So you can't. You get a situation that is dominant and no mechanisms for engaging that.
Two questions come to mind for me at this point, Jason. I don't know if I can put them into one question, but is it fun? Is dating fun today for young people? I mean, I can't help wondering if for some people, maybe both some boys and some girls, mm-hmm. dating might not be kind of frightening, you know. In other words, it's not. I'm thinking, say, a very healthy, well balanced, emotionally well balanced girl might say, "I don't like what I'm kind of afraid of dating this guy more than three times."
Yeah, I think it's highly stressful, and it's highly worrisome for the students. They're worried about a whole bunch of things. They don't have a mechanism for understanding what they're doing. They don't have any sort of roles. Even the term dating is anachronistic, and they wouldn't resonate with it. So they don't really know what dating is about. And they haven't really thought about it. So it's terrifying. What am I doing? They have to ask that question. And then they have to ask it themselves. And then really they should be talking to the other person. But if you don't know what you're doing, you can't really have that conversation because it might be threatening. You're pushing too far. You want this and I want that. So it exposes differences. So they don't have that. The culture is saying you should be like this. I see it's the Animal House narrative. What is college? Doesn't matter. Go party, do whatever you want. You'll be successful afterwards, and because none of this really matters. But it really is sort of debilitating because the assumption that we're supposed to come in as freshmen and be crazy and do all this crazy stuff and not worry about it. And that's just the way it is. So they feel enormous pressure to do this way. Most people are not happy with that. They don't have a...
Most people?
I would say like 90% of the people. I mean, it's hard to get sort of stats on this.
Sure.
You do have a few, like a small group of people that, you know, really like that mentality.
Sure.
I don't agree with that. But I think you'd say, oh yeah, hookup culture's great. I love this freshman. I mean, the phenomenon of seniors picking up freshmen, you know, senior guys, it's really, this is the work. Senior guys trying to pick up freshman girls to take advantage of that freshman year that tends to play out on any number of scenarios. So I think there's a small group of people that think it's great, but most people don't.
Well, somehow, though, people do still get married, and some of them get happily married. So they come through some courtship or dating process that leads somewhere. So how does it happen today?
Well, I think, I mean, this is the, it's someplace like St. Vincent's, there's a certain advantage to it because even if the hookup culture is sort of pushing here, you have enough people that, there's enough people that aren't comfortable with it that are willing to say so. And then you've got, you agree or disagree with it, you've got the Catholic sexual ethics that are present that you have to address in some ways. You have to talk about. And so it provides both a resistance to the dominant culture and at least a reason to talk about the norms and the things that you're going to agree upon. So I think you get a little bit of that pushback. And so people, it's a little bit freer, I think, here in some ways. How does it emerge? the stories that you hear about people that are coming out of the hookup culture, they feel like, oh, I hook up a lot and eventually I'll just happen upon someone that I really like and likes me back and we'll get married and live happily ever after. I don't know how well that sort of works because they have the image of marriage as happily ever after as well, much less they don't have an understanding of what's happening in dating. But I think in other environments you get, like here, you find people going out with their friends more. Like, you go out with a group of friends and we sort of like each other, let's hang out. You get people that develop our friends in college or classes or because they're major, because they're sports, that they get to know each other they don't have to feel like, oh, we have to go on a date and go do something romantic. They feel like they can be relaxed, know each other in the class or in the dorm or in sports, and they can ease into those conversations and then can ease into a relationship in a way that's not as anxiety-ridden and is much more like, it's much better preparation for marriage, much more sort of better preparation for courtship.
It's the first time I've ever seen this, but you talk about sexual ethics and having it taught here at St. Vincent's. And actually, in a way, it is a freeing type of thing because now a person has some sort of guidelines, something to fall back on to cut out some of that anxiety of what do I do in this situation? At least now you have, there is something to do. Mm-hmm. And this is, by the way, what it's based on. It's just the rule.
Yeah.
It's so the law frees the person.
I'm always stunned about that when I address this subject in a bunch of my classes. It is freeing because here you have that tradition, that heritage, and it enables you to really talk about stuff. Where that if you don't have that, you can bring it up. Oh, I don't think that's right. Well, that's just your preference, and it just gets dismissed, and you can't really engage it because there's no tradition that you're beholden to, no law that's worthy of talking or debating or nuancing.
Yeah.
So it is in some ways the rules that enable the conversation to happen. But yes, it's an anomaly. I'm always surprised by, and it's also this idea that actually, because I need to note it since I'm an academic, it's an idea that I picked up on in conversation with one of my good friends, Donna Freitas. So she, in a bunch of her research on sex and spirituality, this is the kind of thing that she came out with: is that the campus cultures that had vibrant discussions of sexual ethics. Not that everybody was sort of towing the line, but that people were discussing these things. Even ones that disagreed with it were discussing them because you had to sort of engage this. And that if you didn't have that, then there was no discussion whatsoever going on because you didn't have any grounds for discussing. Yeah. That's your preference, that's my preference, and how do you talk about preferences other than you should have my preference, right? Yeah. It's just persuasion. So you couldn't have any rational argument, so it just didn't happen.
Well, this has been really wonderful. I wish we could carry it on, but for the sake of our audience, we always try to keep it short. Thanks. Thanks a million, Jason. And we're going to get back to you. But thanks. Thank you.
That was good.